Thank you, everybody, and Bill, Reverend Bill. Everything is one. I'm a mystic, so I always try to remind myself that everything is one. In the end, it is impossible from our human vantage point to know what is positive and what is negative. That is the message of the Taoist yin-yang symbol. We have a circle that represents the whole, and then we have these two little curves, but in the white side, there's a little black dot, and in the black side, there's a little white dot. And that is to remind us that we really can't know from our vantage point what is positive and what is negative. Today is, according to our Coptic friends, a very auspicious day, being 11/11, and today, 100 years ago, 11/11 at 11 a.m., probably somewhere in Europe, so probably 6 or 7 hours ago, not 10 minutes ago, was the end of World War I. Now, that would seem to be a positive event. World War I was terrible. So many people were killed. There were 6 million soldiers killed and 10 million civilians killed, and another 20 million people were injured. So it was a terrible war, very terrible war. And they kept killing each other. The last person died at 10:58 a.m., even though the armistice had been announced 6 hours before. But the leaders of the different countries that were involved had spent so much time brainwashing the soldiers about the evil of the enemy that they felt they were doing a good deed by continuing to kill almost up to the last minute. So that's kind of the problem as I see from a theoretical standpoint, that when we think we know what's good and right, we might be wrong, because we can all be caught up in the heat of the moment. I personally, as long as I can remember, I didn't like war. I didn't like the idea of war. Now, of course, I was born in 1958, so I was kind of on the tail end of the hippies, who were all peace and love. And I remember when my mother's sister and her husband came, and my Republican parents let them stay in our house, camped out in their sleeping bags in the living room and the den, on their way to the demonstration against the Pentagon to end the war in Vietnam. So somehow, I'm not sure why that was. My parents were always pretty conservative, but they did take this progressive action to allow their home to be invaded by the peace workers. So, war, I've never liked. I've just never liked the idea. And then when I got married, I chose to marry a French citizen who was the only offspring of two Holocaust survivors. And I had no idea what that would mean for me. We were talking before the service started about how you kind of never know what you're getting into with life. You know, even something so simple as having kids turns out to be kind of complicated. So I married this French guy, only child of two Holocaust survivors. His mother was saved by Catholic nuns during the war. I probably should ask him what the story was exactly with his father, but his mother was definitely saved by nuns. And so he was kind of crazy. He wasn't necessarily bad crazy. After I divorced him, my dad said, "Well, that's good you divorced that lazy guy, that crazy guy." And I said, no, I didn't divorce him because he was crazy. I divorced him because he was lazy. You know, craziness is a good thing because who decides what's crazy and what's not crazy? But some of his craziness definitely, I later realized, was a result of being the offspring of two people who had suffered so much. And of course, my in-laws weren't the only people who suffered in World War II. You know, the World War II was the result of World War I. So here we are, 100 years later, after the end of World War I, which was so terrible that there were many people who felt compelled to try to work for an end to some of the worst aspects of the war. We already had the International Red Cross. But the League of Nations, which now we have the United Nations, thank you, was a result of World War I. So there were a lot of people who were motivated by the pain and the suffering of the war to do something to move humans beyond the worst excesses of war. But what's the deal? Why are we humans still fighting wars? And I like to dig way back for reasons. And of course, most of the humans on the face of the earth are influenced by one of the great world religions. Even if they're not believers, they're still embedded in a culture that is strongly influenced by the great world religions. So let's just take a look at some of these religions. Hinduism's great scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, tells us that some wars are justified. Why did that great war take place? Well, there were these two brothers who were, you know, from a powerful family, and they both became kings of neighboring domains, and they had a dice game. And it got kind of hot, exciting game. And eventually, the one brother bet his kingdom for 13 years to his brother, and he lost. Well, his brother wasn't such a good king as he was. And when the 13 years were up, he refused to give his brother back his kingdom. And so this, we are told by the Gita, is a justified war because the people of that country needed their good king back. And even though the king was very sad to be killing all his cousins, he was told by Krishna, Lord Krishna, God, that it was necessary to fight that war. In China, we have Sun Tzu, who was kind of in the height of the glory days of the Taoists, who wrote a book called The Art of War. And in that book, he outlines a method to analyze an upcoming war and decide if it's justified. And some wars he considers to be justified. And that book is still studied in modern military schools. West Point uses The Art of War to teach our generals how to fight wars and how to decide if a war is justified. Aside from that, Westerners do have our own traditions justifying war. Trojan War, remember that? There was a movie about it recently called Troy, I think. So what was that about? Well, the Trojans were basically what we would call today a bunch of warlords. And there was a beautiful woman, Helen. And she came of marriageable age. And of course, all the eligible warlords wanted her because she was so beautiful. But they wanted to keep the peace. So they all agreed, whoever she chose, and they did let her choose, whoever she chose, all the other men would defend her choice and her husband if anybody else tried to take her away. So they had a pact. Well, then this Trojan prince came and, well, did he kidnap her or did she get sick of her fat, short, ugly Spartan husband? It's not clear. Maybe she wanted to be kidnapped. But anyway, that was a Trojan War, and it was justified because there was a pact that, you know, all these other guys who didn't get Helen had promised that they would defend her husband from any theft of his wife. What about the Bible? Well, I mean, the Bible has lots of wars in it, and some very sad events. Maybe someday I will bring my revision of the chapter in Genesis that describes the first genocide. So let's see, we had Abraham, Isaac. Isaac had all these sons. We were talking earlier, is it easier to raise sons or daughters? Well, Isaac had 12 sons and one daughter. Well, he didn't pay very much attention to his daughter. And so when they finally settled down and Isaac bought some property near an established city, his daughter went off to seek some feminine companionship. But instead, she met the handsome prince of the town and had sex with him. Now, was she raped? Or was she interested? So anyway, her brothers were not happy that she had not waited for permission from their father. And so several of her brothers came up with a revenge plan and annihilated the entire town. Even after they had agreed to essentially convert to Isaac's religion and all the men got circumcised, those evil brothers waited until the men were all lying in pain after their recent adult circumcisions and chose that moment to go in and kill everybody. Kill the men. They took the women and integrated them into the tribe. So that, I believe, kind of set the scene for the other genocides in the Old Testament. So, you know, these are the things that were considered just reasons for war. And I think that, I hope that all of us sitting here feel that all of those reasons are not justified for war. I don't know, maybe the Bhagavad Gita war, you know, not getting his kingdom back, leaving his people subject to a bad king. I don't know. Maybe that's probably the best judge. But genocide at the order of your God was considered such a good deed in those days, the days of the Bible, that the Israelite scribes, when they were editing the final versions of the Old Testament, made up an extra genocide so they could brag to their descendants that they had gotten rid of the sinners. The Battle of Jericho. Anybody heard of the Battle of Jericho? They marched around the city of Jericho when the walls came tumbling down. Well, it turns out that all the modern archaeologists and historians have come to the conclusion that the walls of Jericho had already fallen down a few hundred years before the Israelites ever got into that area. So, right now, as the human race, we don't like genocide. Right? Anybody here, you like genocide?
Well, I wanted to ask you, without the subject, just do you have any idea of why back then genocide was so important to them? Did you cover that already? And if it takes you too far, of course, it's okay. We can talk later
about it. I would just briefly say, and yes, thank you. That would be a great, great subject for another discussion. But that's really the great question, because how did people think of themselves? There was no concept back then of humanity. There really wasn't. And tattoos, I think that's one of the reasons that the Old Testament forbade tattoos, because tattoos at that time were not an expression of individuality like they are now, but an entire tribe would get tattooed the same way. And so you were first and foremost a member of your tribe, and not even secondarily or thirdly or fourthly a member of humanity. That just wasn't really a concept. You were the people. Many, many indigenous people, the word for their name for themselves is the word for the people, the real people. They are the, so getting rid of other groups was a good deed. So I do have bad blood chemistry and tend to struggle with depression quite a bit, but studying ancient history gives me hope. It gives me hope because now, 4,000 years later, it's only taken us a mere 4,000 years to have the concept of humanity. You know, even though that is part of the purpose of Genesis, supposedly, that we all came from Adam and Eve, that we are all sisters and brothers, but yet that was a concept that didn't really, it had been sown as a seed, but it hadn't taken root and grown. And I think a lot of us now do feel like we are members of humanity, even if we still have some other smaller cultural groups that define who we are on a day-to-day basis. Most humans, at least, are familiar with the idea of humanity as a big family. So, what other progress have we made? Well, back in the days described by the Bible, the kings of Assyria, big power at that time, next to Babylon. They're still fighting there. We call it Iraq now. When the slain enemies needed to be counted so that the king could brag about how many of his enemy soldiers he had killed, they used to have the scribes go around and chop off their hands. Chop off their hands, and then they would make big, giant piles of hands, and then the scribes could go and count the hands. So again, do we do that now? No. We think that would be unacceptable. We have all kinds of international agreements to give the dead back. Does it always happen? No, but at least we have agreements. We have consensus among the vast majority of people that that is a bad behavior. So we have made some progress. What can we do to, I don't want to say eliminate war, because maybe that's too difficult a task. I think the people who make progress for humanity are the people who know how to bite off a little task. So what can we all do? I don't think there's anybody in this room who is powerful enough to end wars. But is there something we can do? Can we pray to end the causes of war? Can we try to think about what we can do in our daily life to end the causes of war? Now, that's a whole other field of study. What are the causes of war? And I actually did some research for this message and came across this interesting paper by Matthew Jackson and Massimo Morelli from 2007 called Political Bias in and War in the American Economic Review, which I didn't read that article because I was going to have to pay for it and I was cheap. But I did find another article that they wrote, which was available for free, and they make a very interesting point. Well, first of all, they say most wars are caused by bargaining failures. I'm still thinking about that. I mean, to me, bargaining failure is not a cause of war. A bargaining failure is a mechanism that facilitates war.
Can I just offer the term commerce? Commerce is a cause for war.
Yes. There are a million causes. We should have a workshop on this. Yes, if you read what I wrote as opposed to my extemporaneous embracing of uncertainty here, now, and I posted this on my website, I give a whole bunch of other reasons, including our commerce in oil was given as a reason for going to fight the war in Iraq some years ago. So these guys make the point, takes them about 20 pages, that bargaining failures are a cause for war. But for me, that's not a cause. what is a cause for war? Injustice. To me, injustice is a cause for war. And that's why I don't want to immediately pray. That's part of why I don't want to immediately pray for an end to war, because some wars are necessary to achieve justice. Now, are there better ways to achieve justice than war? Yes. So I'm not going to war. I would like to try to convince my government not to go to war so often. And how can I do that? I can do that by working for justice for every individual. Because when we all have justice, then peace will naturally flow from that. Because there's not going to be any reason. If we all truly love justice and act to support justice, social justice, not just justice in an individual court case, but real, true social justice, a social justice where every person has a right to clean water and education and the basic minimum requirements to live. If every person on the face of the earth had that, I think that would reduce the true causes of war. So, I obviously, as usual, have 5 pages of notes and am on page 2, but I did want to point out that our thoughts are the builder, thoughts are where everything starts. If we can focus our thoughts on a world of justice and peace, our focusing here on November 11th, this auspicious day, we will bring that world of peace and justice closer to reality. And I'd also like to remind everybody that Jesus's message told the people of his day, don't wait for peace on earth. The kingdom of heaven, the peaceful kingdom of heaven, is within. But it's kind of interesting because come Christmas, the celebration of Jesus's life, what's the big phrase that everybody throws around? Peace on earth. So it's kind of hard to have complete peace inside. Some people do manage to do it, but I think for most of us, it's pretty hard to have complete peace inside when the world around us is so unpeaceful. So let's pray and spread the word about the benefit of praying for peace within and peace on earth. God bless.
Thank you, Debbie. It all starts from within. Pure, plain, and simple. Could I have my two sterling assistants help me with the collection? Mm-hmm.